Blog Talk Radio.
Live with Icon, Granny Hofster, and Big Swin.
Oh yeah, I love that music so much. We want to thank Sebastian Kane as well as Colin Kramer for putting together our intros, our little segue pieces. Want to thank SharpshooterFunding.com and the entire Hart family, the legendary Hart family, for being one of our sponsors and pretty much having the entire living family other than Brett on the show, which was has been great. You guys have been awesome holding the show down while I've been a little bit in the weeds the last couple of weeks. I haven't really been able to get on the way that I wanted to get on. I've been doing four or five things at once, but luckily the Yankees are off tonight, and I don't have to do the music studio because I got one of the interns to cover the music studio. So, therefore, I am here for you guys the entire night. I do want to thank you guys, though, for holding down the fort and putting on some good interviews. I went back and I've listened to them on Tuesday afternoons, and you guys didn't miss a beat. So I want to thank you for that, and say I got the two best co-hosts on the internet right now.
And we love doing the show, and just the main thing is that, you know, COVID has sucked, and we do know this, but it hasn't slowed us down what we're doing. And, if there's people that thought that COVID might cause us to go away for a while, that didn't happen, did it?
Well, why would it, though? I mean, we're on the internet, so it's not like we're near anybody. We're not, having to be 6 feet apart from anybody. In fact, I'm sure we provided some peace of mind for some of these people during COVID, simply because, a lot of the times, during quarantine and whatnot, we gave people something to listen to, something to look forward to on the air when everything else pretty much was closed. I think we really excelled on this this whole COVID front.
Well, I think what most people were thinking of is, the fact that if any of us contracted COVID or whatever, that kind of stuff is what I think they were worried about.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, I don't know if you guys had it. I have not been confirmed as having it. I was a little sick about a month or so ago, but I got over it relatively quickly. I don't know about you guys, though, if you guys had it at all.
No, I never did. And I just got my vaccination, so I'm kind of happy about that.
Nice, nice. How about you, Granny? You never got it, did you?
Well, they said in November of last year that I tested positive, but if I was truly actually positive, it was probably a very, very mild case because I never lost my taste. I never lost my sense of smell. The only thing I had was like a sinus headache. And I still don't think I really had it, but I've had my first vaccination. I get my second one April 28th. So.
Okay. Nice. See, for me, I'm going to have to end up getting it. I'm going to hold off until the very last minute, simply because I'm going to have to get it in order to go back on the air for Skidmore. Because as you guys know, I do the play-by-play for Skidmore College, and if I'm going to be down on the court with all the other people keeping time and stats and things like that, I'm going to be around people, I'm going to have to get it. But that doesn't start again until the fall, so I'll probably wait and see if I can swing it till then. But, you know, New York is a very strict state, and, you know, New York is making things harder and harder to live daily life without it. So I may have to cave a little earlier. We'll see.
Well, you know, you got to do what you got to do, but we want you to be safe too, you know. And
of course.
You know.
We have just so you know. I know usually we talk a little bit about sports. We talk a little bit about wrestling, things like that. In order to start off the show, we do have a 3-guest show here tonight. We also have our 781 number, who I'm assuming is our first guest. I'm being told is on the hold line with us. So, I mean, did you want to go to him right out of the gate, or him or her right out of the gate, or did you want to vamp for a little bit and then go to them?
Well, yeah, we can. You said 781, right?
Correct.
Yeah, that's our first guest. We can go ahead and go to him, and then I'll vent about our local. One of our local talk show guys later.
Oh, well, how long is the event going to be? Because I love Icon Rant.
Well, we can save it for a while.
All right, we'll save it. But I definitely want to hear it before we go off the air tonight. So I'm going to have the intern put them on. Icon, you do your thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, stepping out of the green room and walking down the aisle. About to enter the ring right now. He is the man with a master plan. The man that knows all video, all talk showing, all writing, all songwriting, you name it, he does it all. He is Leonard Kaplan.
Hey, this is Leonard Kaplan here from Wrestling Talk. You're listening to the Attitude Era Live with the host, the Icon, Big Swing, and Granny Hulster.
How are you, buddy? How's it going?
I'm good. Was that a good promo read?
Yes, it was. How about the introduction you got?
I'm astounded. That was a fantastic introduction.
And
Joe McHugh could have done better.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, you won't get any better introductions than anywhere than right here. Just ask me. I'll tell you.
That's quite an honor. How did you hear about my show?
Well, you know, I like to go and browse through the internet and look on Facebook and look through mutual friends, and I came across you, and I thought that you would be a great fit for our show. You can promote us, and we can promote you, and that's what we like to do, a little cross-promoting, and it kind of goes hand-in-hand. So that's how I found you.
Sounds great. What's your favorite episode of ours?
I can't narrow it down because every episode that you've done is great, so I can't really narrow it down.
That's quite high praise. So what city are you in, and what state?
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's what we'll do here real quick. We'll have you do a little – we want you to give us a little background about yourself, and then we'll talk about that, and then we'll interview you, and then we'll have a lot of fun.
Sounds good. Well, we are the world's oldest Wrestling Talk Show, we started in June of 1987, and our first guest was Walter Killer Kowalski, whose school was right next to my hometown of Revere, Massachusetts. At the time, I worked for cable, and I ran an after-school video club, and I wanted something for my after-school kids to do for a real show because they were into TV production. And my friend Paul Fay, the late Paul Fay, was a wrestling photographer for Killer Kowalski and invited him to my studio, and we spent about 90 minutes with him. And that became the basis for what became the first 5 episodes of the show. And the rest is history.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Killer Kowalski. And what's interesting about that, we have Leonard Kaplan as our guest here. We have him for the next 35 minutes or so. What's interesting about Killer Kowalski is I actually interviewed him when I was on Real Radio 96.7, the Ben and Jim show. He was one of the guests that I found to be on our nationally syndicated talk show back in the day. And one of our guests, one of our co-hosts had asked him, well, geez, you know, that doesn't sound like a very nice name. How did you get the name Killer? And he said, well, I knocked the guy's ear off, and I laughed about it. And they called me Killer, and the name stuck.
That's correct. That's the story.
Yep, and one of the co-hosts that we had at the time was kind of a smartass. He said to me, he said to Killer, he said, well, geez, instead of laughing about it, shouldn't you have called the ambulance? And the Killer said to him, well, I guess I know how I'm going to handle you for the rest of this interview. It was great. It was awesome. So
yeah.
Here's what we'll do. I'm going to ask a few questions, and we'll do a little round table, and then we have all three of us here tonight, so we're going to have some fun with you.
Sure.
So, you know, you've been doing this since 87. Is there anybody that you interviewed that didn't go so well? Because we've had a few of those.
Oh, we've had a few of those. So we interviewed Sting before he was in the NWO, when he still had the blonde hair and everything, and it was the best interview that we had done on location. He spent a whole half an hour with us, and we couldn't wait to see it. And when I brought the tape back to the studio, this is back in probably 91, I guess, when we brought the tape back to the studio, there was nothing there. We saw Sting walking away. My assistant, who was the tape operator, had mixed pause with record and put it in pause when she should have recorded. And we salvaged it, but we went to his next location where he was making a personal appearance, and we got the interview, but it wasn't as great as the one that we lost.
Well, you know, yeah, it's kind of hard to do things like that naturally, isn't it? When you set something up and then, you know, you basically did the interview and then you got to redo it again. You already know what he's going to say, so it doesn't really come natural. It's not organic anymore. That's why, like, when we have our show, you know, some guests want us to send questions in advance. A couple things, rules that we have on our show. One, we won't send you questions in advance. Two, we're always live. Three, we will not pay you to be a guest. And four, if you're a jerk, my co-host will probably take your side over mine. So that's basically the way it works.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy when that happened.
Right.
But probably the rudest guest we've had was the Sandman, was insulting me for the whole time.
Really?
The Sandman strikes me as, you know, as the kind of guy that, you know, would do that. I mean, if he's anything like his in-person character, You know, that's not surprising. But a lot of the times these guys aren't. They put on a show when they get in front of the camera, and they're a totally different person, you know, on interviews and things. So in a way, I'm surprised, but in a way, I'm also not surprised.
Well, I didn't really take offense to it because I assumed that he was in character, you know.
Well, you know, but I'll tell you, I actually got to meet him in person. He was here live in Fargo for an event that I worked with. Hopefully he'll be back next year, the Maui Madness. He was a guest here, and they let the icon ask a question, and I asked the Sandman, I said, so tell me, Sandman, is Paul Heyman's word better than the checks he used to write? And he kind of paused a little bit, and he said, is that what you want to ask me? I said, yes, I'd like to get to the heart of the matter. Now, like I say, you know, every guest that we've had on the show, I'm going to ask you one more question, and we'll kind of do a roundtable here. We have Leonard Kaplan is our guest here. We have 30 minutes. Granny, you would remember the one jerky guest that we had. Do you remember?
Yes, I do remember because he asked me, well, it was Stevie Ray, and Icon was doing his thing, and, you know, and he was asking his questions like he does, and then he gets to me, and Stevie Ray says, hold on. He says, Granny, I want to know why you are not interviewing me. And I was like, I said, well, I'm just a co-host. I said, I'm not the actual host of this show. And he says, that's no excuse. He says, I want to know why you're not doing this interview. And I was just, because, I mean, I'm a big wrestling fan. I have been a wrestling fan for as long as I can remember. And I'm not even a wrestler with the gimmick name that I have. And I got that gimmick name from a former coworker because he says, I'm going to start calling you Granny Hulkster because you like wrestling. And I do. And I actually have a very good friend that made me my original Granny shirt, which I still have. It says, what you going to do when Granny Hulkster goes crazy on you? And I holler at all the bad guys at the wrestling shows. I do not like the heels. I can get in their faces. They tell me to sit down and shut up before I break a hip. I mean, it goes on and on and on. So, but yeah, Stevie Ray wanted to know why Granny Hulkster was not interviewing him.
So, with that being said, we have a good buddy here, a new friend of the show. 28 minutes. We have Mr. Kaplan. Granny, what do you got for our guest? Go ahead.
Well, what has been one of your most enjoyable interviews you've done with someone, and who was it with?
Well, there's a lot of answers I could give, but I could say Medusa because she became my friend for the next 30 years, and we've done projects together, and it's kind of amazing when you make friends with somebody that you meet on a show and they become a very important person to you in your life, and you can call them anytime, and they're also a celebrity. She's the first celebrity I ever hung out with, and when I'm in Florida, I go see her, and she was a lot of fun on the show. That's what started it all, you know, very, very outspoken and funny and a laugh a minute.
Well, I've met some pretty amazing big-time wrestlers over the years myself. I mean, you know, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Tommy Dreamer, just to name a couple, you know, the Rock and Roll Express, which is, they're like one of my favorite tag teams ever. I mean, there used to be a wrestling company that ran in Arkansas where I live called Traditional Championship Wrestling, and they did TV tapings, and they still show the old reruns of TCW on TV down in the Little Rock area, and they quit running in 2013. And to this very day, I still have people come up and ask me, hey, aren't you that lady from TCW? Aren't you Granny? I'm like, yeah, I'm her. You know, so. But they always had me sitting in the front row facing the camera because they knew, especially the heel wrestlers would come and interact with me, and they knew I would interact right back. So I always tried to help out and make it look good for the TV tapings.
That's great.
Well, we have Mr. Kaplan as our guest here. We have 25 minutes. It's been a while since I've been able to do this. Big Swing, what do you got for our guest? We have Mr. Kaplan as our guest. What do you got?
So for your show, I'm curious because I'm a radio guy myself. I do play-by-play for a local, you know, I'm up in New York. Actually, right now I'm in Clearwater Beach, Florida, but different, you know, it doesn't matter. Tonight, for all intents and purposes, studios in New York, we get our guests because Icon does his dirty work and rolls up his sleeves and goes out and finds these people to come on and talk to us. I'm always curious about the process. You know, through radio, do you go on and book your guests? Do you have a team? How do you meet some of these people? How do you get somebody like Sting, for example, or the Sandman to come on your show? Like, I mean, do you reach out to them? I mean, how does it work?
A number of different ways. I mean, we've been on for so long, and we have so many contacts at this point that,
true. Longevity always helps, yeah.
Previous guests helped me a lot, and, repeat guests, you know, I could just call them myself. And we had, I have two co-hosts. My main co-host these days is Ed Whittier. And he was with me since the beginning as a kid, and he kind of grew up with the show. But the third co-host, Jim Quinlan, he had contacts in ECW. That's how I got the Sandman and Spike Dudley and people like that. But he was my ECW contact. But, you know, I have a collection of phone numbers, and I think Medusa has gotten me a few numbers as well. And it's just kind of, you know, no official process, really. Mainly, sometimes a lot of time goes by and we just talk about wrestling instead, you know, like reviewing it, like Siskel and Ebert type of a thing. And we don't have any guests, you know. Once a year, there's an event around here called FanFest in the next state over in Rhode Island. And we get a whole bunch of interviews on location there, because we know the promoter over there. And that, I just save all those and I play them during shows, and that's our interviews for the year.
Okay. Nice. Now, have you always been, you know, involved in the wrestling business, or did you start, you know, your radio career doing something else and got into it, you know, in another way?
I am a teacher, a high school teacher. I teach at a vocational high school at this point. I've always taught television production. These days I teach a little bit of podcasting, still photography, and television production. They call that media technology now. And I've never been involved directly with wrestling except the IWF, Walter Kilikowski's Federation, gave me their Hall of Fame award. They inducted their Hall of Fame a couple of years ago because I had so many of their guys on the show, and they call me their Mean Gene, I guess. So I was honored in 2018 with that. So my co-host and I have always been kind of on the peripheral of wrestling, kind of on the edge of it, but never quite involved. I've done commentary. I have ring announced on local independents. I introduced King Kong Bundy one time, which was an honor, and that's as close as I really got to it all.
Okay. And were you a fan though? Like did you watch wrestling either growing up or throughout any point in your life?
Oh, yeah.
Or Yeah, okay.
My grandparents got me into wrestling as a teenager. My grandmother's favorite wrestler was Mad Dog Vachon, and I enjoyed it because I was fascinated with the character differences between what I was seeing in the WWF in Boston and what I was seeing up in the Canadian wrestling with Edouard Carpentier, and Andre the Giant was up there, but he was a different character. He was his own name, Andre Rusimoff, up there. And
okay.
I was confused when I was a teenager when a character would be a heel in Boston, but he would be a face in Canada or vice versa. And I kind of got out of wrestling for a while until my late co-host and co-producer, Paul Fay, got me back in because he was a wrestling photographer and he happened to be able to get Walter Killer Kowalski on the show, and it started my fandom all over again.
Hmm. Awesome.
Leonard Kaplan's our guest here. We have 20 minutes here with Adams. Now I'm going to ask some tougher questions here first. Now, a couple questions I do have to ask is your rules about sharing contacts with other podcasts and radio shows. What is your rules on that?
Well, I would always ask the person first, obviously. Can I give so-and-so your number and all that? If they say no, then it's no. I would never violate anybody's privacy like that.
So that leads me to the next question. You think you might be able to hook us up with a few?
It's possible. It's possible. I don't think you need me. I think you guys are very organized and you've been around for a while. I don't think you really need me. You probably got some people that I haven't got.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, I do appreciate that, and I actually take that as a compliment. And what I'm going to do is what you just said there is when I edit this, I'm going to edit that out, and I'm going to put that in my highlight reel saying, listen to this guy bring up the icon. It's great. Now,
no, I look
professional
when I hear him.
Speaking of that, you know, I do have a couple ego questions. Now, you know, the icon made you a cool collector's card. What did you think of that?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. What was that?
You know, the icon made you a cool collector's card. What was your thought on that?
Made me a cool collector's card?
Yeah, you know, I sent it to you on Messenger with your picture on it.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. That was great. That was great. Thank you for that.
No, and the thing is, I do apologize in the background here. People can hear my dog whine. Granny didn't talk to him before the show, so now he's jealous. I'm sorry.
Well, hello, Homer. I'm sorry we didn't have time to talk, my little fur baby. But Granny loves you, Homer.
Now he's licking the phone. Okay.
Never apologize for a dog because I love dogs.
Well, I do
too.
Well,
I'll tell you what. I will say this real quick. I don't want to. This is about you. It's not about me. But I'm getting married in September, and Homer is hoping that Granny comes down for it because I'm gonna put him with her the entire time she's here. And I know that Big Spring's coming down because he's gonna be the best DJ that any wedding show has ever seen here in Fargo.
Congratulations on your marriage.
You know, this now I'm going to ask this, and we won't touch too much on it, but, you know, being a radio guy, being in your area, what has, you know, we know that COVID sucks and it's terrible, but how has COVID affected you, if at all, and what have you guys done to combat it?
Well, as a teacher, I work with the program Zoom a lot, so everything that we've been doing has been on Zoom. So it's actually made things easier in some respects because there's no travel time involved. There's no crew. It's just doing a Zoom call and recording it. What could be easier than that?
Now, being a teacher and doing Zoom classroom stuff, is that more difficult than it is being? I would assume it would be than being live in the classroom.
Well, my class is a hands-on thing. I teach people how to edit and use cameras and all that stuff, so it's quite impossible to do it fully on Zoom. What's even harder is where we are hybrid now, which means part-time in person for a few days and then remote for another few days. That's going to end after my vacation this week, where we go back to all in person. But when you have some kids online and some kid person, that is pretty tough because your attention is split in two, and it's not really fun, not fun at all.
So, you know, with that being said, you know, I guess I couldn't see what it would be like, you know. And, you know, I know how I feel about this. People say, you know, that's not funny, Icon. You shouldn't joke about that. But, you know, I'll tell you what, though. If this would have happened when I was a kid and having to learn remotely back in the 80s, I don't think it would have been possible, you know, because they don't have the technology back then that they do now. And I'd probably still be in second grade if this was going on, you know, back in my day.
Yeah, I agree. It's tough. You know, the technology, they would probably close schools. There was no alternative back then. You couldn't have something like this, you know?
Right. Leonard Kaplan's our guest here. We have 14 minutes here with our buddy here. So we can get this in. If our fans want to check you out and see you, you got a Facebook, you got Instagram, a YouTube, a Twitter, a Twitch, a GoFundMe, a bake sale. What do you got?
We have Wrestling Talk on Facebook. It's a Facebook group. You can check us out. We have a YouTube channel. Just look under Leonard Aaron, LeonardAaron. That's my Wrestling Talk channel. And you'll find not all of our shows, but a lot of them on there. And that's it. You can contact me through the Facebook group. I'll definitely answer questions.
And the next question is, when does the Icon get to be a guest on your show?
Anytime he wants. Anytime.
Awesome. And I'll bring the comedy. You know, I did famously actually put out a comedy CD about 10 years ago. It went aluminum, but you know, it was what it was at the time.
Right.
And now that I do this podcast, we've been doing it. Yeah, we've been doing the show for about 5 years now, and the sales on my comedy CD has gotten even less. So I think I'm in the red. we have Leonard Kaplan's our guest.
At least he makes himself less.
Yeah, we have 2 minutes before we finish up. Granny Big Swing, what else you got for our guests? Go ahead.
Well, I'm good. I mean, I think this has been an awesome interview. I think everything's been kind of highlighted and touched on. I mean,
well, I want to go on and listen to that Sandman interview, because I have a talk radio show. Obviously, this is our podcast that we do on Monday nights, but every day during the day, I have a sports talk show on the local FM radio here in New York, and you know, I've had callers in the past who were, you know, obviously not as desirable as others, none super famous. Usually, if we get pro athletes on, usually they're pretty respectful, seeing as we're an ESPN affiliate and they don't want to look bad. But I'm just curious on an interview like what you said with the Sandman. Do you get into it with him at all, or do you just take the high road and just keep being the good guy and just let him make an ass of himself?
I take the high road. I don't like confrontation, that kind of confrontation, kind of unnecessary, you know. If he's doing his gimmick, let him do his gimmick. And I did get body slammed once on my show by a local wrestler who's since passed away, and it was an interesting experience, let's put it that way.
Now, is the, you know, I go over to the Boston area a lot sometimes for work and things, and never quite for this, though. How is the wrestling community, both on an independent circle and things, over where you're at? Like is it big, or is it kind of
fragmented? I think, you know, after McMahon expanded the WWE everywhere and got rid of the territories, I would imagine it's too, well, right now, especially with COVID, it's not too healthy. But we have a couple of groups. We have Chaotic Wrestling. We have Beyond Wrestling. We have the Northeast Championship Wrestling. I think we have the MWF. A lot of cities have their own little federations, and it's pretty much the same people that the same independent wrestlers, I think, wrestle for most of those, because they have to make some money too, you know.
Is John Cena like a local hero out there?
Well, yeah, we never see him, obviously, because he's too big now, you know. Actually,
yeah.
I have his father on. I know his father pretty well, and we've had his father on a few times. We actually, John Cena's father brought the two WWE belts that John had on my show, and there's pictures of me on my Facebook page with those two belts.
Oh, nice.
The spinner belt, you know, and the other one. I can't remember. The other one, it's like a $10,000 belt.
Jeez.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
no,
that's awesome. Yeah, I always love, you know, when I'm able to talk to, you know, local celebrities and things. But in my area, you see, obviously I'm from New York, but that everyone just assumes that's the city. I actually live a little bit up from New York, and in my particular area, we don't really have a local celebrity wrestler, so I can't come on and say, oh, that's, you know, 518 Pride right there, just, you know, just like John Cena represents for West Newbury in the state of Massachusetts. We don't really have that in upstate New York, so that would be kind of cool to be able to get in with the family of somebody, but nah, can't be that lucky.
There's a local restaurant here that Chinese restaurant. Mick Foley played his comedy act there, and I met John Cena Sr., the father, and we both attended that show together a few years ago.
Oh, nice.
So he's a
Mick Foley's a great guy. I met him at Icon's event out in Fargo, North Dakota, when I went out for the Maui Madness event. And it was him and Billy Gunn and a couple of others. And, yeah, Foley's a great guy.
Yeah, it's funny thing about Foley, because we've interviewed him four times over the years, but he was always in character as either Dude Love or Cactus Jack.
Uh-huh.
And I saw him at another personal appearance more recently, maybe about, right before Bruno died, because we saw Bruno there, and I mentioned this to him. I said, you know, we've never really interviewed you as yourself, you know. So we've done promos with him, I would say, four times, but we've never really interviewed Foley as himself. That would be a great interview.
You know, and the sad thing is about Mick Foley is you can definitely tell all the years of wrestling has had his toll the way he walks, you know. You know, he's still
But
a
he
great
wasn't
guy,
just a wrestler. I mean, he was a glorified stuntman. I mean, you know, how many other guys are going to volunteer to take the dive off the cage that he took against The Undertaker, or some of those crazy physicality matches that he volunteered himself to be in, for the betterment of the business and for the fans and everything, like, nobody's going to volunteer to do that. I mean, I'm not surprised that his body is beat up. You look at an NFL player, and an NFL player plays four seasons in the NFL, and he's all beat up. Foley did this for 15 years in some of the most brutal matches in history. So I'm not really surprised about that.
You know, Ric Flair said exactly what you just said to Foley about Foley in his biography. And Foley and Flair, you probably know this, had a lot of heat between them because of that. Because he didn't respect Foley's ability. He just called him a glorified stuntman.
I mean, I fully respect his ability. I'm just saying he's not your prototypical wrestler. I mean, if you look at a match and you put Mick Foley in the ring against, I mean, I know his name is taboo, and I shouldn't say the name at this point, but you look at, you know, a guy like a Chris Benoit, or you put him in against a, you know, a Dean Malenko, or you put him in against somebody who was had technical prowess and could actually wrestle. I mean, Foley could do nothing. He had, what, a DDT, and you know, it was all he did. So, I mean, Foley's not popular because of his outlandish matches, but I still do respect everything he did for the business. And growing up in the Attitude Era myself, and growing up watching that match live and crying in front of the television because I thought he died, I do respect you know, everything he did in that regard. But I mean, Flair's not wrong either, honestly.
Oh, I get it. I just wouldn't say that to him.
Oh no, not to him. No, of course. No. But my job as the heel character on this show is to say what I feel about him. So Icon's over here like, shh, stop it. I'm like, no, I'm doing it, man. I'm going for it.
I totally get it. Are you familiar with Evan Ginsberg?
I've heard the name, yes.
Yes, he does that show, that wrestling show.
Wrestling,
I've been trying to
and
get
everything.
Him as, yeah, I've been trying to get him as a guest on our show. Maybe you can hook me up with him.
I can put in a good word for you for him. He's a really good friend of mine. He does a show with Buddy Sotelo called Wrestling and Everything, and it's a bit like your show in the sense that they have more things besides wrestling on as well. And he's a really good entertainment. He was the associate producer for The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke, and he was also the associate producer for 350 Days, the documentary. So, and he really has the contacts.
Nice.
He's right in the heart of New York City, you know. Hell of a guy. But we call each other our brother from another mother because we share the same opinions on a lot of things in and out of wrestling.
Leonard Kapp was our guest here. Unfortunately, we only got about 3 minutes left. And like I say, you know, we do take time out of your schedule for joining us tonight. And you're awesome. And, you know, there's two guys that I would like to get on if you have contacts with them. Ginsberg is one, and Dave Meltzer is another.
I don't have any contact with Dave Meltzer. Never met the man.
Yeah, you know, he's got kind of an interesting reputation in the business, but you know, so.
Well, he's the man for the sheets, you know.
Right. Exactly. So we got about 90 seconds left. Is there anything that you want to tell the fans what day of the week is your show? And this, I already know what it is, but this is I'm asking for the fans. What day of the week is your show? What it is, and how they can catch it?
Well, our show is called Wrestling Talk, and most of the shows that you can see are on YouTube, on my YouTube channel, Leonard Aaron, LEONARD, AARON. And if you have any requests for me to upload certain guests that I've had, you can ask me on my Facebook page, Wrestling Talk, and I'll do my best to accommodate you. And I want to say to everybody, my tagline at the end of the show, stay in the ring.
And real quick before you go here, fans that are listening, we are doing the contest. Anybody that likes our page from the end of this show to the beginning of next week's show is automatically qualified to win autographs from our guests from this week. And hopefully you yourself Leonard might be able to send us a few autographs for giveaways for our promo that we're going to have in December.
I'd be glad to do it.
Awesome. I'll send you an address, and we appreciate it. And thank you for taking time out of your schedule. We love everything you do, and we'll definitely have you back on again.
Thank you very much.
All right, Leonard Kaplan, ladies and gentlemen, the man, the myth, the wrestling talk show legend. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, that was cool.
Awesome. So our next guest should be calling right in. I know that they've been itching at the bit to get on, so check the – let me know if they're there.
Yeah, it's a 513, correct?
Let me make sure.
You should
yeah,
know this. Okay.
Well, yeah, I know, but you know, a lot of people change their numbers before they come on compared to the numbers that I have. But yeah, that should be our guess. Yes.
Are we still going to have time for the icon rant at some point in this show?
Yes, at the end. Yes, maybe we can go a little overtime, but because I definitely want to get this off my chest.
Okay, well, yeah, and I definitely want you to, because I love icon rants. Okay, well then, let's do this. Let me put them through, and you do your thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, stepping out of the green room and walking down the aisle, she has got to be the most beautiful woman wrestler to ever come out of Hawks Pro Wrestling Training School. Ladies and gentlemen, she puts the cat on the hot tin roofs. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Kayla Roofs.
Hi.
How are you?
Hello. Hey, that's actually the first time I've ever gone by my shoot name.
Well, would you prefer to use your shoot name, or should we use your real name?
Well, my shoot name is Kayla. My worker name is Shauna.
All right. Well, what would you prefer? How should we address you?
Let's do, because it's wrestling related, so let's just do Shauna.
Shauna, okay. Well,
all right, Icon. I wish I had a rewind sound effect I could hit. You could just do it again, but I don't have it queued up.
All good.
Well, I'll tell you what, then, Shauna, if you want to go ahead and read that liner I sent you, then we'll... Then we'll have some fun with the interview.
There we go. Okay. Hey, this is Shauna Reed. You're listening to the Attitude Era live with the host, the Icon, the Big Swing, and Granny Hulkster.
Well, thank you very much, Miss Reed. It's very nice to have you. And I know that you promised that if I stopped calling you at 2 in the morning, you drop the restraining order. So I appreciate that. So
yes.
What we're going to do here is if you give us a little background about yourself, and then we'll have some fun with the interview.
Okay. Well, I started wrestling about 5.5 years ago out here in Fairfield, Ohio, with Cody Hawk, along with Luchador Super Zeta. And then within the past 3 months, I graduated from Dustin Rhodes Wrestling Academy out in Texas. And just, you know, been traveling like crazy, got a few opportunities with AEW this past few weeks, so that was awesome, and, you know, just wrestling everywhere I can.
Shauna Reed's our guest here. We got 26 minutes. What we'll do here is I'm going to ask a few questions, and then we'll have Granny and that Big Swing, and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to ask you the tougher questions. My first question is, when you're wrestling, do you consider yourself to be a babyface, a heel, an in-betweeny, or are you more of what the crowd thinks that you are?
That's actually, like, you said you were going to wait till the tough questions later.
Oh, yeah, he is.
I'm very much both. I mean, I'm used very differently wherever I go. Places I'm heel, a lot of places I'm baby. But my character is a female with, like, split personalities. Like, I hear, like, you know, voices. So I'm very much, like, heel and baby a lot of the places. So it's pretty much whatever, if the crowd wants to boo me or if they want to cheer me. So we'll go from there.
Well, with that being said, Granny, we have a heel on our hands. What do you got for our guest? We have Shonda Reed. We got 25 minutes. Go ahead, Granny. What do you got?
Well, first of all, hello, and thank you for being on our show. I'm not a wrestler. I'm just a big fan of the sport. But Granny don't like the heels. I could talk some pretty good smack to the heels when I have to. So I think you, and if I was at one of your wrestling shows, I think I would have a lot of fun interacting with you. So.
Oh, yeah, that's fine, because I would go right back at you. That always makes our job easier, so definitely.
Well, you know, I could give you an example. There's a local wrestling company in Springdale, Arkansas, where I live, and there's one female wrestler. They call her the American Witch, Erica Torres. And she was watching a match between the women's champion, Killer Kate, against, I can't remember the young lady's name that she was facing. And Erica was sitting out there, and she says, "Kate, what kind of champion are you?" And I said, "She's a better one than you are, Erica." So when Erica came out at the last show to talk to Kate, because she was going to be in a number one contendership match for the championship belt, I said, "Erica," I said, "remember last month when you said what kind of champion Kate was?" And I said, "She was a better champion than you were." And everybody in the building started chanting, "Granny, Granny, Granny." And Erica put her hands over her ears, and she's like, "Why are you cheering that old hag's name for? Why are you cheering her on?" So I guess one of my questions to you is, if you could have a dream match, what kind of match would you want to have, and who would it be against? It could be past, present, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Well, I just got fortunate enough to have one of my dream matches with Thunder Rosa last week on AEW, so that was awesome. But one of my dream matches that I always wanted was me versus AJ Lee. I think we could have some magic together. I think our characters would work great together. I've just always been a big fan of her. So
That would be awesome. Well, I know, you mentioned AEW. I have actually had a few of my wrestling friends actually do some matches on AEW from time to time here pretty recently. So I'm excited for you there. That's pretty awesome. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And Big Swing, we have Shonda Reed as our guest here. We got 22 minutes. Now, Big Swing, if you remember, Shonda here, she's our second guest to ever be on AEW. Do you remember who our first guest was before she was a star?
I do. Kenzie Page, actually. And she was, what, like 17 or something? And she was just getting into the wrestling business, was just, kind of starting to come into her own a little bit. And we were actually her first ever interview outside of, like, her little circle. And, her first ever, like, nationally syndicated interview. And a couple years later, this was, I think, what was it, Icon, like the fall of this year, maybe the summer? Well, whatever her debut was, I called Icon and I was like, "Oh my God," I was like, "you got to turn on AEW." And he's like, "Well, why? What, what happened?" I was like, no, dude, turn it on. So he turns it on and I'm like, "Does that name look familiar?" And she actually made her AEW debut, I think it was like a year to the day or something like that after talking to us. And, Icon always asks this question, so get ready for it. He always says at the end of the show, "Hey, if you ever make it big, if you go to WWE or whenever, will you still be friends with us? Will you still talk to us?" And he was like, oh, of course I will, blah, 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 blah. And we've been in contact with her, and she's been on AEW. So, I mean, she kept her end of the bargain. But yeah, that was pretty cool with that. Well, now we got another AEW.
Shauna Reed's our guest here. We have 20 minutes. Now, there's actually a couple fans sent us some questions. I'm going to ask them, and I don't know if you'd be willing to answer them or not. So I'm going to ask them. If you don't want to answer them, just let me know, okay?
Okay.
First off, a question a fan asked was about your big puppy dog. Is that your dog?
Yeah, she's not really big. She's a Beagle Lab mix, but she's the size of a Beagle.
And how long you had her?
I've had her for about 5-6 years.
Oh, she's such a sweetheart, isn't she?
Oh yeah, she's my baby.
And another fan asked, now this is coming from a fan, it's not from me, even though people think it's from me. Apparently you like to take pictures of yourself in a bikini. Is that true?
I mean, yeah.
I mean, who doesn't?
There you go.
I like taking pictures of myself in a bikini. I mean, who doesn't like doing it?
Well,
right?
The thing is, I'd rather see Shauna Reed in a bikini than you, though. Now, are you under contract with AEW, or do they just call you whenever they need a good superstar?
No, I'm not under contract with them. Hopefully in the future. But, you know, I graduated from Dustin's training school, and he put in a good word, and then they emailed me and gave me an opportunity. So
now if our fans wanted to see that match, is it available anywhere?
Yeah, they're both on YouTube. It's AEW Dark, and then the one against Thunder Rosa actually premiered tonight on Elevation. So they can just go to YouTube and see those.
Now, of course, we want fans to check it out. We don't want you to give away the results, but how did that match go?
Let's
as
just
far
say
as
it went really
reaction.
Well.
Really well, okay.
Yeah.
And being in AEW Dark, is it just like a regular production? Do they have ring announcers and all that, or do you wrestle and they dub in the audio commentary later?
No, they have ring announcers there. They have commentary straight during it. Everything is there and filmed and done right then and there.
And who is on commentary for you?
So my one against Thunder Rosa tonight was formerly known as Big Show, but Paul Wright and Tony Giovanni. And then last week was Taz, and I don't remember the other one.
It wasn't Jim Ross?
No. Ross only does Dynamite.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have
it a guy by the name of Excalibur? Is he a Mav commentator?
It very well might have been. I don't know, to be honest with you. I didn't pay attention to that one.
Well, there is a Mav commentator that sometimes commentates with Taz, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I believe his name is Excalibur or something like that.
Yeah.
So now you have met the Big Show and Tony Giovanni.
Yes, I've met the Big Show a few times prior when I was doing WWE Extra stuff, but getting to see him and having him commentate my match at AEW was pretty amazing.
Have you ever listened to any of Tony Giovanni's podcasts?
I have not.
What happened when WWE Mondays? Yeah.
Please don't do that again.
That's the way his show starts. That's the way he does it. It's not my fault.
I'm sure he does a little better than that, but okay.
And because of his wife, she got us the new terminology called slap dicks. But anyway, we'll talk about that later. So now, when you're wrestling now, you're obviously would like to go full time with AEW. But I guess my question is, and I do ask all the independent wrestlers this: if you were offered that big time contract by AEW or WWE, is that something that you would definitely want to do? You know, because when you're an independent, you know, you control your own destiny, you do what you want. When you're with AEW or WWE, they say you can do this, you can't do this, this and that. What is your thought on that?
Definitely if I was offered a contract, I would definitely take it from either company. I've been fortunate enough to go to both and work for both, just as extras and enhancement talent. So, I mean, I'm definitely not going to say no when someone, like, hands you a freaking multi-million-dollar contract, potentially. But, I mean, I feel like I'm a very creative person, and I like to, you know, write my own promos. I like to do all this. So I know at AEW, they let you they give you a lot of creative freedom. WWE, I know not so much. But I mean, you get signed for how many years, then make your name out there, make your money. And then, you know, when the time comes and you're released or you retire from those companies, you know, that's when you can go out and go back on the indies or even retire with, if you made enough money, you know. So I definitely take one if a contract came my way.
So, I mean, why wouldn't you? You know, I mean, that's Icon. That's almost like, hey, you know, do you want to play in the G League or play in the NBA? You know, I mean, do you want to play Canadian football or play in the NFL? I mean, it's of course they're going to take that contract if it comes their way. I would imagine anyway.
You know, with that being said, now when you do get that big contract, will you not big time us and still be our friend and still talk to us?
Only if you don't call me at 2 a.m. in the morning.
I promise I was going to stop doing that. You know.
Well, then, deal.
Okay. All right. Good. Now, speaking of that, fans know that we do have a contest going on. Anybody that likes our show page, Off the Ropes, on Facebook, from the end of this show to the beginning of next show, is automatically qualified to win autographs from the guests from this week, from the basically from any week. But would you be willing to send us some autographs for some giveaways?
Yeah, I can definitely see what I got.
All right. Well, we'll take anything, you know. If you want to sign index cards or, you know, business cards or I think the Icons of Jackass cards, whatever it may be, we'll take whatever we can.
Okay, definitely.
Of course, I haven't seen any of those cards yet, but I'm sure they're out there. Shauna Reed's our guest here. We have 12 minutes. Now, of course, I do have one ego question for you.
Oh, boy.
You know, the icon made you a cool collector's card. What was your thought on that?
No, that was awesome. I love that kind of stuff. So, yeah, definitely. I like it.
And, you know, the other ego question I have is your introduction for the show, was that not the best in-ring introduction you've ever had to this point?
You know what? It was definitely different than I've ever had, and it was pretty awesome. So, yes, kudos.
Because I guess my next question is, you know, if you ever want to be like what Alberto Del Rio used to do when he had his own personal ring announcer, I'll come carry your bags and be your ring announcer for you.
Perfect. We'll talk business.
There you go. So now we won't just spend too much time on this because we know it sucks. But, you know, COVID is a thing, and we know this. How has COVID affected your career and affected your area where you're at?
Okay, well, I'm in Cincinnati. And, I mean, it pretty much shut everything down, which killed – I had a bunch of bookings. I was actually booked throughout like almost the whole year already. I was booked out through the whole year in 2020, and to lose all those bookings absolutely sucked. And then, because a lot of those bookings were like a lot of how I was paying my bills. I am a nurse also. So my, like, you know, shoot life, like when the pandemic hit, like work was insane. But then there was a point where they were potentially letting a lot of us nurses go. So that was a struggle. So, I mean, I'm glad the pandemic is starting to, you know, I wouldn't say it's ever going to be gone. But, I mean, at least it's starting to open up a little bit. We here in Ohio, we are allowed to have 25% capacity, which in our shows, which is barely anything, but at least, you know, it's something. So.
And I just got to ask, because I'm a big Buckeyes fan myself. Let's see if you can do it. Oh, wait.
Hi-o.
There you go. There you go. I am a big Buckeyes fan, and for all you Alabama fans, we're coming for you next season. Just ask Clemson what happens when you beat us the year before. We take your ass out the next year. Anyway, back to Shauna Reed. Here's our guest here. We have 9 minutes. So do you know when your next match is? And if you do, when is it, where is it, and who might it be against, if you know?
Well, I've got actually 3 matches this upcoming week. So Friday, I'm double booked. I am wrestling in Hamilton, Ohio at FGW. I don't know my opponent yet. And then I have to skedaddle from there and go down to Addison, Ohio, for Battle of the Border for, and I'm wrestling Amazing Maria James. And then the next day is Battle Border again in Aurora, Indiana. And I don't know who my opponent is for that yet.
Now, with what you're doing now, do you plan on doing a lot of traveling then, or do you pretty much stay around the Ohio area then?
Oh, no. I travel, like, insane. I actually just got back from Texas yesterday again. They flew me out to Texas to wrestle. So, and I think next week I'm Tennessee. So, like, I'm very much traveling like crazy, so...
You know, we eventually got to get you down here to Fargo, North Dakota for Pulpomania. We have a little wrestling promotion here in Fargo, North Dakota. We got to try and get you down here for that sometime before you get that 15-year contract with AEW.
All right, sounds like a plan.
Now, speaking of AEW, Now, you know, you mentioned that you're not under contract with them, and you do want to try and get that contract with them. Have they let you know when your next show with them might be, or is it just like they call you, you go?
It's pretty much they call you, you go.
All right. Now, and I'll understand if you don't want to answer this question, but, you know, you mentioned you got 3 bookings this weekend. Let's say that A&W calls you tomorrow, and they say, well, hey, we need you here Saturday, and you know, you already have those 2 bookings. Do you do the AEW thing, or do you go where you were previously booked? How would you determine that?
I mean,
if you don't want to answer the question.
No, I think anybody realizes, like, if AEW or, you know, WWE called and said they needed me here this day. I feel like any independent wrestling promoter or promoter understands that, where they're like, okay, you have to go to that, you know? Like, it's not just like, hey, I'm canceling your booking for another booking in the area or another booking somewhere else with AEW or WWE or even, you know, Japan or, you know, anything like that. Like, I think it's a bit of a difference. So if AEW ever called me and said, hey, I need you here this day, and I'm booked somewhere, tell the promoter where I'm already booked that, hey, I'm sorry, but I got to go do this. This is my future, you know, so.
And I'm just kind of curious, when you were, of course, you know, AEW, because of COVID, you know, they don't allow fans in the stands. I understand this. But when you were first backstage at your first AEW appearance, what went through your mind? What were you thinking? Were you completely at awe? Kind of take us through that a little bit.
Well, I mean, I was terrified, so that you know, was a thing. And I kind of had a little heads up on who I was wrestling that night. I was wrestling Britt Baker my first night. So I was like, oh, God. So I kind of already was a little stressed out with that. And I only did, you know, extra talent stuff with WWE, like being in the back and stuff like that, so, and little skits. So I never really got the opportunity to, like, actually work on a bigger stage. And all I wanted to do was, you know, go out there and make Dustin proud, make, like, try to, you know, prove I belong there as well. But so it was a very nerve-wracking thing. And it was, I mean, but then throughout the day, it was pretty amazing. Like, you see how laid back everybody is and how friendly a lot of the big people are. So it got a little bit better.
Shauna Reed's our guest here. Of course, we only have 4 minutes left. I wish we had you for 4 more years. But, you know, we have fans listening that are definitely going to be following you now. Hopefully that, you know, when you get that, when you get signed by AEW, you'd be willing to come back on with us either before your appearance or after your appearance or, you know, whatever it is. Or you can be like Jerry Lawler, be on the cell phone with us when you're doing in the ring, you know. We would love to have you do that for us if you would.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We got to get, I'll see if I ever even get that contract, but I mean, definitely.
You know, and the other thing I was going to ask about being backstage at AEW, you know, you mentioned Tony Schiavone and Big Show were the commentators, and then, you know, you met them. I myself would be at awe. You know, were you like, holy crap, that's the Big Show? Or like, oh, my God, Tony Schiavone? Or, you know, did that ever cross your mind, or like it was just like business as usual?
No, I've met Big Show quite a few times prior, like when I did WWE Extra stuff. So I knew. So we kind of knew each other a little bit. So I knew him. So I mean, but Paul's huge. Like, he's so big, and I mean, so it's hard to, even if you know the guy, not to be in awe of just how like huge he is. And then with Tony, I mean, I've always been a fan of his work and his commentating and just him in general. But, like, I mean, I think I've been around for a while that I, like, I know, like, that these workers are just, like, people just like us now. And so I don't think I was, like, in, like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to mark out over Tony Schiavone. So, but he was still a pretty cool guy, so.
You know, because, you know, like me, I know I was at awe when I met Mick Foley. And, you know, you can just ask Big Swing if he were to get the opportunity to meet Edge, he'd act like he dropped acid. I guarantee it.
Edge or Alexa Bliss.
Oh,
not creepy, not creepy Halloween Alexa Bliss, like the normal Alexa Bliss.
Speaking of that, that's something else I have to mention before we go off the air, probably the overtime session if we have it. I have a heat with one of the people that you just mentioned, so we'll talk about that
boy.
In a while. But Shauna Reed's our guest here. We got about 60 seconds. Fans want to check you out and see what you're doing. You got a Facebook, an Instagram, a YouTube, a Twitter, a Twitch, a GoFundMe, a restraining order. What do you got?
Well, I have Facebook. I'm working on making another like page. So, but you can still find me on Facebook at Shauna Reed. You can find me on Twitter at Shauna Reed 93, Instagram, Shauna_Reed. And then you can just find me on YouTube by typing in my name in the search bar.
Awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, Shauna, you're awesome. And I sent you an address. If you can send us a few autographs, we'd be more than appreciative, and we'll definitely have you back on again. And I promise I will stop calling you at 2 in the morning, because now I know what time zones are.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Sean. You have a good night. Appreciate it. Thank you.
You too. Thanks.
All right. Sean Reed, ladies and gentlemen. All right. So I think we might be doing this rapid fire. I think our next guest is calling in here shortly, I think.
They're on. If it's a 615 you're looking for, they're on now.
All right. Let me make sure. Yeah, that would be our next guest. So if you want to go ahead and put them through, we will go ahead and talk to them.
Okay, and here you go.
Ladies and gentlemen, stepping out of the green room and walking down the aisle. Not only is he going to bring the laughs, he's also going to bring the goodies. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the coolest comedian in the world today. He is Steve Goody.
Hey, this is Steve Goody. You're listening to The Attitude here live with the host, the icon, the big swing, and Granny Hoaxster. Actually,
awesome.
This is Shauna Reed. I'm sorry. I take it all back.
Oh, okay. So how are you doing? Good to have you, buddy.
Oh, it's good to be here. It's good to get a message from you guys every 5 minutes. Yeah, I'm here. Hi.
Well, there you go. Well, hey, at least you weren't getting calls at 2 in the morning, right?
Not from you anyway. Yeah.
Right. So Steve Goody's our guest here. We have 39 minutes. And Big Swing will allow us to, if we can go overtime, maybe a little overtime on that, we'll figure that out. But
we can go a little bit. I mean, we can't go crazy over just because, like I said, we do have the FM stuff we have to put on. But I can go probably a little bit over.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, Steve, you want to give us a quick little background about yourself, and then we'll have some fun with the interview.
Okay. I just want you to know, if this is going 39 minutes, I need to pee, so I'm going to talk faster than usual.
Okay,
I'm Steve Goody. I live in Nashville. I was born in Chicago, so I'm confused right off the bat. I do funny songs. I'm the host at the iconic Bluebird Cafe in Nashville, Tennessee on Sundays, at least when there's not a pandemic. I run my own recording studio. I record my own songs and other people's songs, and I put out over 30 albums of goofy crap since 1993. I'm very, very old, in case that wasn't really clear. And now you can ask me things because I've run out of biography.
Well, you know, we had a good friend of yours or an acquaintance of yours on last week, Brad Tassel.
Brad Tassel? That guy still owes me money. Nah, Brad's fine.
Well, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. He did make good on the autographs he was supposed to send us, though.
Well, that's good.
So now you do a lot of stuff in the entertainment industry. You mentioned that you record songs and everything. How many different albums have you put off over the years?
I believe it's 33, and I'm working on number 34 now. I've kind of lost track, but it's somewhere in there.
And are they still available at some place, like on Amazon or out of print?
Well, some are on Amazon, some are on iTunes, but the whole collection in its entirety is available on my website. That's stevegoody.com. Stevegoody.com.
And what is your favorite one that you've done?
The favorite album or favorite song? Oh, wow. Jeez. They're all equally stupid. Let me look at a list of them. Sorry, I didn't know this was going to come up. Let's see. Where are my albums? Who am I kidding? The latest one is always the best one. No, that's not quite true. I think my favorite one that I've ever put out is called What and Quit Showbiz, because that's got more songs on it that I still play live than I think any other album I've ever done. And if I can do them live and still find them funny and still get laughs from other people, then I think you've got a winner.
All right. Steve Goody's our guest here. We've got about 36 minutes. So here's how we're going to do this. I'm going to ask you a few questions. And then we'll go to Granny, and then we'll go to Big Swing, and then we'll come back to me. I'm going to ask you the tougher questions.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Is any of this going to be on the final?
Yes, all of it.
It is, as a matter of fact. Name and date on the top of the page, please. All right. So now you also your main forte is comedy, correct?
I think so. You tell me. Has this been vaguely amusing?
Well, I guess my first question is, doing the comedy stuff that you do, what is the, do you have a favorite venue that you've been to, and who have you opened for and headlined for?
Oh, man. Okay. I think my favorite stand-up comedy venue I've ever played was a place called Charlie Goodnight's in North Carolina, and I don't even know if they're still there. The last time I played there was decades ago. They're one of the first places in the universe to have a non-smoking night and then become completely non-smoking. And, most places are non-smoking now. That sounds weird that a place would have smoking. But, yeah, that used to be the way it was. You'd get up on stage with your jokes and just breathe in the cancer from the entire audience. That was how it was in the late 80s and early 90s. And now nobody even remembers that. Charlie Goodnights was a trendsetter on that score and a whole lot of others. They're just really good to their talent, and their clientele were awesome audiences every night. You know, you might expect a really good crowd on a Saturday night in a regular comedy club. The Monday night show at Charlie Goodnight's was just as good as the late show on Friday or the early show on Saturday, whichever one happens to be your favorite. So if they're still there, and if you live in North Carolina and you're listening to this, go to Charlie Goodnight's. Support them. Keep them going, because they deserve it. If they're still there, if they're not, don't worry about it.
The interesting thing is I've heard of Charlie Goodnight's, and unfortunately they're only open now Thursday, Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays. They're closed Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday now.
Yeah, a lot of clubs have gone to that, particularly during a pandemic. Hopefully that'll change again when things open up a little bit. You might be able to get in there another night of the week. But, hey, be glad they're there any nights of the week, and go those nights.
Now, if you could, you mentioned you have an album that you're working on right now. Could you kind of tell us a little bit about when it'll be released, how many tracks you got on it, and the track
sure.
that you really would want people to gravitate to?
Okay, I'll try. Now, you see, I asked a bunch of questions all in a row, and I can't remember what the first one was. I think it'll come out in about 3 months. I do an album a year. I write a song, about a song a month, and I post it on a funny music website called thefump.com. That's FUMP. It stands for the Funny Music Project. So thefunnymusicproject.com or thefump.com is where you can find songs before they've come out on an album to get a little feedback, and I get them out there while they're still fresh. Usually I get my albums out in January, having done a whole slew of songs the previous year. I release them as an album. But last year, being a pandemic and all, I wrote an awful lot of songs about trying not to get sick and my feelings about the administration, and nobody really wants to hear about any of that stuff. So I'm writing more stuff and recording more stuff, and I'll probably get halfway through this year before it gets out, so that's a bit of an anomaly. And maybe I'll catch up and get another one out in January 2022, but who knows. As far as funny songs that I think are worth listening to, the one that I wrote recently that has nothing to do with the pandemic or anything else is a parody of Eddie Money's Two Tickets to Paradise, because, that's how old I am. I wrote a parody called Two Chickens with Parasites. I think it's a riot. It's about going down food poisoning.
Steve Goody's our guest here. We have 32 minutes. And if you I don't know if you were serious or not, but if you do need to take a little bathroom break,
I'm okay.
I just did it already.
I'm fine. I did it while we've been talking.
Okay. I can be like my other nickname, Phil Time. Steve Goody's our guest. Well, I'll tell you what. First, Steve, I'm going to introduce you to Granny Hulkster. If she likes you, she'll bake you cookies. If she doesn't like you, like a guy by the name of Sylvester J. Fox, she'll hit you with her cane. Go ahead, Barry. What do you got for our guest, Steve Goody? Go ahead.
Well, it's been thanks for being on, and it's been a very enjoyable interview with you. I've really enjoyed listening to the interview so far.
Thanks.
What made you decide you wanted to do stand-up comic?
Well, it's kind of a sickness that begins early in life, and you don't really realize what's going on. I think I first started wanting to be funny when I was reading Mad Magazine at the age of 10 or so. Are you guys fans of Mad Magazine? I'm going to assume you're all going yes.
Mad Magazine.
They used to put full scripts of classic comedy sketches in the magazine, along with all the other stuff. And at one point, when I was 10 and my little brother was 7 or something like that, we found the entire transcript of Who's On First, Abbott and Costello, and we memorized the whole thing as a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old, and we would perform it for the family who would – we would beg them, can we do Who's on First for everybody at Thanksgiving? And they would say, sure, go ahead. I'm sure it was pathetically adorable. And then we got a little better at it as the years went on. We had it memorized, and we got the pacing a little better. Our voices changed. That helped. And it came to a point where the family would actually request it at Thanksgiving. They'd say, hey, you guys want to do Who's on First? And you know how kids are. We would say, no, because kids are awesome. And that's how I got my first taste of being funny in front of people and then resenting people who want you to be funny.
Well, you know, it's funny how you mention that, because every time I want to do comedy at a family gathering, they say, no!
Yeah. Well, see, it's the wrong place for it. The one place you shouldn't try to do comedy is in your house, which is why starting in 2017, I started doing comedy house concerts, because I was having more and more trouble getting booked in comedy clubs. I blame ageism. Thank you very much. And I got a lot of musician friends who play house concerts just doing music. They bring their cello or their barbershop quartet, and they go to people's homes, and everybody sits down, and they have cheese and a beverage, and they perform in their home, and then people tip them and buy their CDs and such. And I thought, well, if they can do that with music, I can do that with comedy, right, which goes against everything you learn about comedy. You don't do jokes in the kitchen. You don't. When your mom at Thanksgiving says, hey, do that funny joke you told me the other day about the gynecologist. No. No, you go to the comedy club for jokes and you stay here for food. That's the way it works, Mom. Well, I've turned that all on its head, and I've been doing house concerts until, you know, a pandemic. But I will do them again, gosh darn it, because I'm not very bright.
Steve Goody's our guest here. We got 29 minutes here. Grady, I didn't mean to interrupt what you're doing. Do you have any other questions?
No, I'm good.
All right.
I guess
well,
I did real
I'm
well.
I'm going to introduce you to our resident club owner and DJ, Big Swing. Big Swing, what do you got for our guest? Steve Goody, go ahead.
Wait, club owner? I wish
yeah.
I owned a club.
Wait, comedian? What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, I wish.
Well,
I wish
whatever.
I owned a club. This is a business where some people, you know, they get started in a bunch of different ways. Did you have anybody that you looked up to that you kind of modeled your comedy style after as you were coming up? Did you say, oh, hey, you know, this person really resonates with me? And when you got on stage, you sort of kind of channeled that a little bit? Or is this all unique you?
Well, it's fun. It's a weird question, which I've had before. And I think most comedians will say, I am not channeling anybody, because we're really trying very hard not to steal anything. It's real hard to have heard a bunch of comedy and not let it leak out every now and then, because sometimes something will sneak into your bit and you forget that you got that from somewhere else, someone else. So we all try very hard not to acknowledge. We acknowledge people we admire, but we don't ever acknowledge borrowing a style or developing our particular voice from taking from someone else. That being said, I love all the classics: Bob Newhart, Johnny Carson, David Letterman, Richard Pryor, George Carlin, of course, Weird Al Yankovic, because I do music and such. And Alan Sherman and that. I love all of them, and I think I've learned from all of them. But when you ask, is my style based on any of them, I will say no, and I will say that to my death.
Now, when you what is the thing that you, I guess, enjoy most about stand-up? Because I know it can be very rewarding. And having been on stage before, not in comedy, but for other things, and getting the crowd to respond and getting the response you're looking for out of the crowd is one of the best feelings in the world. When you get, you know, anywhere from 100 to 1,000 people, you know, you tell them, put your hands up, they put their hands up, you know, from a music thing, like, you know what I mean? You want them to laugh, they laugh. Is there anything that you love the most about comedy? Like, why did you choose to do this, and what's the most stressful thing about it?
Well, what you just said is sort of the answer I might give. The power you feel of being on, you're the only one with a microphone. You're the only one facing that direction. Everybody else is facing the other direction. You're special. You got the lights on you. You've got more amplification than everybody else. It does have a bit of a high to it for the egomaniac like me, and apparently like you. But there's more to it, I think. Comedy is the only art form where you get a response immediately, and you count on the response. And if you don't get it every few seconds, you are failing. It is going very badly unless you get feedback of the correct sort every few seconds. And the pressure of that is enormous, but also the reward, as you just said. It's very rewarding to get that right. And you know you're a comedian if you can get it wrong 20 times and keep coming back, bombing and bombing and bombing, keep coming back, because you know you can do this. There's a way to do this. I will keep suffering and embarrassing myself in front of my peers and strangers and my family until I get it right. And one good night will outlast 20 bad nights. And if you're actually a comedian or a performer of anything that's funny, not just stand-up, sketch, music, whatever's funny, if you keep coming back to it even when it's not working, then you are probably the person who should be doing that. And what you just said about if we can get 100 people or 1,000 people to react, hey, try it with 5 people over Zoom. That's especially exciting. And I've been doing that this year. For a while there, I had a whole bunch of gigs that were booked for April, May, June of last year, and they all got canceled, obviously. But about 2/3 of them got rebooked as Zoom things, and I found a way to actually make that work. And some of them were attended by 30, 40, 50 people, which is a lot on a Zoom call, as you may know. It's hard to keep that all under control. And then some of them were only 1 or 2 people, which is easier to control but more depressing. But I found there's something advantageous about getting to do your show from your house every single time for different audiences. It feels a little bit more like, I'm guessing, what it would be like to have a talk show where you do a monologue, because you're in the same spot every night and you develop a groove for that even with different audiences. And you can the atmosphere is just different than going to a different club every day or every week and having to set stuff up, tear it down. There's a comfort in doing it right from your home and then broadcasting it out there. So I will actually kind of miss that, although I've missed a live audience much more than I will ever miss doing Zoom shows. But there's been a lot to learn from that, and I think it's a lot of comedians I know did not take advantage of that. They thought, nah, that can't work. I will just wait this out. And I feel like they missed an opportunity, a dangerous opportunity. But if comedy isn't dangerous, then it's not comedy. So I think I've answered way more than you asked. And probably
yes, but that's awesome, though. And I guess the last thing, because I kind of know you're chomping at the bit, this is a very weird time that we're in, especially for people who want to be funny, who have a certain sense of humor and look at things maybe a different way in their mind than the average society does. Being a radio guy myself, being in sports talk radio, I have to be very, very careful. And you know, you notice sometimes I have small pauses in between what I'm saying because I have to think it over, because you say the wrong thing one time and boom, your life and career is over. Do you have to sort of tailor your act to the sensitivity that's in this society nowadays, or do you go out and do your thing and not really care about the cancel culture?
You know, it's a question I've heard a lot, and I've heard a couple comedians answer this in a more public forum, and I agree with what many of them said, which is this isn't any different than it's always been. You can always ruin everything by saying the wrong thing, but you can also ruin everything by being so careful that you never say the really funny thing. And there's comedians who have been extremely successful by pushing that envelope, by crossing that line on purpose, and some have gone down in flames, and perhaps we haven't even heard of them because they did such a good job of destroying everything. And then some of them were real, real careful, and then I could name some names, but let's not do that. Some people have gotten so middle of the road that what I really loved about them earlier in their career just disappeared when they got some fame and success. And then there's the ones, you know, Carlin is a great example.
He's my favorite of all time, George Carlin. I just don't see George Carlin's style being successful nowadays when everybody is so sensitive about every little thing. I think George Carlin would have picket signs and riots outside of his shows, unfortunately. And, you know, there'd be Twitter movements to shut him down and all this stuff. Even though I love him, I just think that society today, something like his kind of act wouldn't work.
I got to disagree with you on a couple of reasons. First of all, there are many eras of George Carlin, as you may recall. When he started, he was super clean, wearing a suit and tie like everybody else. Then he kind of got the hippy-dippy thing going. Then he got a little bit more edgy and had started examining cultural stuff and religion and getting really edgy. And then toward the end of his life, he was so grumpy. You know, I think the MGM Grand people were – I think that's the hotel in Vegas where he had a standing gig. They came to him and said, "Can you be a little less bleak?" They didn't fire him, but they were real close. You know, people would like to laugh occasionally during your show, and he was so busy really just saying his truth. And not that there weren't any laughs in there. There were lots of laughs in there, but it wasn't.
Yeah, he did get very preachy towards the end. I'll give you that.
Yeah, and I think I think George would have carried on if he'd had the energy and the life expectancy of a turtle and was still at it. He would carry on through this, just like people. Bill Maher carries on. He's the first one that came to mind. There's a lot of edgy comics. If Ralphie May was still with us, he would still be doing this. He pushed it so hard and would continue to do so. And I think you can't cancel the career of someone whose career isn't depending on you not canceling them. Comedians who are underground, who don't have TV shows that they have to keep up ratings, they're just doing their comedy in comedy clubs. Unless you do something that's criminal and borderline Louis C.K., I don't know.
Well, I don't know.
I'm really on the fence with him. But if in your act if that's the only issue, not in your private life, the things you say on stage are the only things people are complaining about, and you're being a good citizen otherwise. I think if you are a smart comedian and you stay in your lane, which is comedy clubs and real audiences, and if you get TV, great. If you get movies, great. But that's not the main thing. The main thing is to entertain a comedy club audience or a stadium if you can manage that. But that's still a comedy thing. That's not TV. That's not movies. That's comedy. Mm-hmm. Comedy still has room for that. And I think we call it cancel culture, but we've had cancel culture. We just didn't call it that. Since the 50s, since people are getting blacklisted for associating or even being alleged to associate with communists, you know, from Lenny Bruce onward, people have always – the Smothers Brothers, a classic case. Their TV show gets canceled because they were too controversial, criticizing the Vietnam War and similar things. So that was a serious cancellation. Then the Dixie Chicks, you know, regardless of how you feel about the things they said, people have been getting canceled when they are famous forever, and that's not right then or now. But what's also not right is to back down if your comedy is something you mean from the heart and it's making people laugh.
Awesome. That was actually an awesome response. Good stuff.
Steve Goody's our guest here. We got 20 minutes here left with Steve.
I love this countdown. We got to endure 20 more minutes of Steve. All right, carry on.
Well, no, that's just regular time. We're gonna get you over a little overtime too, man. We're gonna make it so that people have to download the rest of the show to hear the tough question I'm gonna ask you. Okay.
Oh God, here we go.
But I want to piggyback on what Big Swing asked. I'm gonna kind of ask a different question, or maybe the same question a different way. But do you think political correctness has affected comedy nowadays?
As a whole or him?
Well, no, just as a whole.
As a whole, okay.
I think, again, it goes. That's another phrase that, like cancel culture, we think is new, but it's not new. We just got a different flavor of it right now. People being careful about saying this. We say this behind closed doors, but we don't say it in public. We'll say this if we're trying to sell you a car. We'll say this if we're trying to sell you a soft drink. I think the attitudes of your audience change, and your comedy needs to change with that if your goal is to make that audience laugh. But your goal isn't simply to make them laugh. If you're a serious comedian, you also want to make them have a different experience than they have with anyone else. And sometimes that means you want to make them think. Sometimes it means you make them want to be shocked. But whatever that thing is, audiences are paying you to either shock them or make them think or something beyond just ha-ha-ha dog and pony show. This isn't the Lucy show where she gets, you know, she's on an assembly line and it's funny when she can't keep up. People want more than that. Nothing against Lucy. She was classic. As I said to the earlier question, we think it's real different now. I don't think it's that different. It's just a different flavor of the same problem, which is people don't know when to be comfortable and not. And in a comedy club, the glove should be off in a comedy club. If you walk into a comedy club, expect something to offend you and expect to roll with it. You know, if you don't like it, you don't have to laugh, but you also don't have to storm out and expect your money back or try to cancel someone's career. People on that stage are trying to find the pulse.
But the fact
of that
is
in that culture.
I'm sorry to cut you off. The fact is that's what happens, though. You see, in this society nowadays, somebody's offended by something. They may not storm out, but they'll go on Twitter and you'll be trending about, oh, you're a homophobe, you're a racist, you're this, you're that. It'll start gaining steam, start gaining traction, and next thing you know, these gigs are going to look at this and go, yo, we're getting negative backlash on this guy. You know, we can't book him without, you know, trouble. And next thing you know, it snowballs into, those things because one person is offended by one stupid joke that you said. They can ruin a career. Like social media, I know that cancel culture is a little bit different nowadays than it's been. It's the same, but it's also different. But social media is what's killing that. I mean, you could do a show in San Francisco and be banned from a comedy club in New York because somebody tweeted about something that they didn't like that you said, and next thing you know, the entire country thinks you're, you know, a bigot or a racist or a this or that, and you won't get another show. So that's the problem with today's society.
I don't see that happening very, very often. Andrew Dice Clay still has a career. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know.
Who has been canceled? Who has said something homophobic and everybody says, well, we can't go to the show anymore?
I haven't seen it in stand-up comedy yet, and I'm happy about that. Because I love stand-up comedy. But I'm seeing it with TV shows. I'm seeing it with radio personalities. I'm seeing it with music artists. You know, I'm seeing it with different things. And I just hope that the last great American, you know, hope that we have of stand-up comedy doesn't fall victim to this. Because I love stand-up.
I think what I'm hearing from you, and again, this is my opinion, I think you're overstating it a little bit. I think comedians who are true comedians, who are out there to push the line a little bit and get people to laugh in an uncomfortable way sometimes, they're not suffering any more than they ever have. There's always that risk that somebody might take something wrong and in one way or another hurt your career. But if you're doing what you mean to be doing, people like Janine Garofalo, people like Ray Romano, who you might not think is edgy, but I've heard him say a few things 20 years ago that you might think about, I can't believe I said that. I've got stuff in songs, and I've been going through my catalog lately and seeing what's problematic. There's little things scattered throughout songs I've written that if I had it to do it again, I would change it a little bit not because I'm afraid of being canceled, because if you're not famous, you can't really be canceled. But because our sensibility as a culture has changed, mine included, and I wouldn't change it because somebody's demanding that I do so or that it will affect my checking account, just because, I'm surprised I said that. If it was me now, I would say it differently. I think that's growth. I think that's – there's a good side and a bad side to all of this, and I'm happier focusing on the good side. And people who get canceled often get canceled for the very wrong reason. I'm not saying you're wrong. The Dixie Chicks is my favorite and / least favorite example. People who really, they got death threats. I understand it was a very heightened moment in our country, but they were saying things. They weren't even in their songs. It was just between songs off the cuff, and the whole country went nuts. Country music just stopped their career, dead. And I think that's wrong, but I think it's also an anomaly and not the rule. I don't see it happening for people who are earnestly saying what they believe in comedy. Country music is a very different thing.
Steve Goody is our guest. Right. We got 13 minutes of regular time, and we are going to do a little overtime. You said we can go up to, 5 or 10 minutes over there, Big Swing?
I'm looking at the commercial block for the FM here. And like I said, the Yankees aren't on tonight, and I can push SportsCenter back. We can probably do a 5 to 6 minutes,
Okay, perfect. So, Steve, I guess my next question is, I know you're familiar with Andy Kaufman. There's a perfect example of a guy that, some of the stuff he did was definitely misunderstood. And it did end up affecting him, which is wrong. Do you feel that that was also unjustified? What happened with him with some of the stuff that he did in his
comedy? What are you referring to?
Well, when he was doing the wrestling thing, and then he got banned from Saturday Night Live, and then he was doing his meditation thing, and they asked him not to be part of it anymore because of all that stuff.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I think Andy's a special case because the joke was often on the audience with Andy. And a lot of people weren't even sure he was dead. They thought there's just one more joke he's playing. First of all, I believe he did die of cancer. I also believe that if he had had more time, that joke would have come around. I don't think he was finished with the wrestling joke. And, it wasn't my cup of tea. That didn't really make me laugh, but it was certainly interesting to see what is this guy doing, this guy who I really respect and enjoy for the most part. He's doing something that seems completely off the rails. I don't know if you've seen interviews with Jerry Lawler since then. He was the professional wrestler who got into this very big public battle with, you know, and lawsuits flying back and forth. He was in on it, I believe. I mean, that's what he said, although that may still be part of the joke. I don't really know. But I think Andy was laughing at us trying to figure it out. And if he'd had more time, he would have moved on to the next thing and probably won most of us back who he might have alienated.
Right. And, you know, I've interviewed Jerry Lawler, and I
have you?
I spent most of the interview talking to him about Andy Kaufman. Because
okay.
Andy Kaufman was one of my heroes and still is. And, you know, I always thought what he did was cutting edge, and I always wanted to wrestle women like him. Of course, I get my ass kicked, but anyway, that's another story. Steve Goody's our guest here. We got 10 minutes of regular time and then a little overtime, because we are going to go overtime with you because, it's a ratings thing, and you're helping us get ratings, and the chat room is actually going crazy, too. Some of the stuff that, you know, you're doing because of COVID stuff, you have done a lot with Brad lately,
mm-hmm.
Tassel.
Yep.
How did you guys get hooked up together?
We met at some hell gig in the mid-90s. I remember it. I don't remember where it was exactly, but I remember the OJ trial was on. So that's how long ago that was. And we worked a couple gigs together just because that happened. We didn't look to get booked together. It just kind of happened. And then about 10 years went by, and then he came down to Nashville where I was living and saw me at the Bluebird and enjoyed one of my Harry Potter songs with his then 3-year-old daughter. I think this was more like in the 2000s, actually. So we were in touch, and he lives in the Bowling Green area, and I live in Nashville, so we're only about an hour away from each other. And he came to me in 2018, I think it was, and said, I've got all these poems that are about Halloween. Let's make songs of them. I'm not a good enough musician to make songs of them. So we did that. We made a whole album of Halloween songs, and we made a stage show of it, and it's Vampire's Ball Ultimate Halloween Party. And then this year, even during a pandemic, I'm sorry, last year, 2020, we came up with a holiday CD, Christmas. At first it was going to be Christmas versus Hanukkah, and then we made it more like Christmas and Hanukkah, because why have a battle about it? And that was fun. And we may make a show about that too. But meanwhile, we're pushing the Halloween thing pretty hard. We're supposed to be part of the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in Scotland, as he may have told you. I bet he told you quite a bit about that last year. But,
yep.
Of course, it was canceled. First time in 70 years the Fringe Festival didn't happen because of a pandemic. We're hoping it happens for real this year. But even if it's not a live thing in person in Scotland, they're definitely doing an online thing. So we will definitely be part of that. And we hope that it's live and in person. And we've been invited to do the Brighton Fringe, which happens in June. That will definitely be online. June 14th through 27th, we'll be doing it every single night at 7 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. That means it's 1 in the afternoon every day for 2 weeks in June. We'll be doing Halloween, which totally makes sense. Trust me, it makes sense. And if you'd like to find out more about that, go to ultimatehalloweenparty.com. That's ultimatehalloweenparty.com. We'd love to have you join us for the Brighton Fringe Festival's Halloween in June.
Steve Goody's our guest here. We got 7 minutes left of regular time, and then we're going to go overtime. You did comment about my countdowns. Of course, I like to, when it comes to the show, I like to run a tight ship. I just want to make sure that
clearly
people are
yeah.
still on board. But I'm kind of curious. You know, you mentioned you've done all these different cool songs and different CDs and everything. Let me ask you this. If someone were to ask you, can you do a song about this or write a song about this guy, is it something that you could, like, do in, like, a matter of weeks? Or is it something that, you know, you have to, like, spend a lot of time on if you get put on the spot that way?
It depends on how funny I think the idea is or the subject. If someone says, can you make a song making fun of Bernie Madoff, who just died in prison. I might be able to do that, but I don't think that's hilarious. If there's a twist that comes to me or that I'm offered and I think it's funny, then, yeah, I can probably do that in a couple of days. And I've also been part of improv songwriting on stage. It's kind of like Whose Line Is It Anyway, but with guitars, where you get an idea and you have to make up a song right now. You know, you've got no time to think about it. Go. And songs just pop out of you, and either they're funny or they're not, and you find out as you know, sometimes they can be really funny, and sometimes it's a nightmare, and that in itself can be funny also. So the answer to your question is, I don't know. It could happen immediately, or it could take forever. Or if it's not that good an idea, it may never happen just because I couldn't find the funny.
Then that brings me to my next question. And if someone asked you to do a parody song about the Icon, would you be able to do something like that? I'd even give you a tip to do that.
I'd need a bunch of information about my subject, and if you had an idea of what song we'd be using as the original song that we're parodying, that would be handy too. If you had a clever rhyme or something already in place, and I could learn from that. But if you didn't have that, yeah, I can try. Who knows if it'll be hilarious, but it'll certainly be insulting. So that's good, right?
Right. Well, let me ask my co-host. Would you guys like to hear a guy make a song about the Icon?
Yes.
I think it's
there you go, Steve. You're a popular guy, you know.
Oh, good.
My actual theme song that I actually use is Eric Bischoff's theme song called "I'm Back." If you could do a twist on that, that'd be awesome, you know.
We'll talk. Have your people call my people. We can work this out. We'll do
all
lunch.
Right. Okay, Chris, get on the phone.
I thought Icon usually represents himself.
He certainly refers to himself in the third person, so that's weird.
He does, all the time.
In fact, I wasn't sure. Well, I was going to say, aren't you the Icon? Who are we talking about? But I didn't want to be rude.
Well, no, I am the Icon, and I do like to talk in the third person, you know, because, The Rock actually stole my gimmick by talking in the third person. A lot of people don't know that.
That was very iconic of him, and he needs to be sued.
Right. But... I think he, if I sold you everything I own, I could buy you lunch.
Me, I'll take
you
it.
Know, if he sold everything he owned, he could buy you Hawaii. So we have Steve Goody's our guest here. So kind of take us through, are you going to be getting out and doing any live shows in the next, in the coming weeks, or are you just working on your albums and the Halloween stuff?
I think it's still a little too early, in my opinion, for us to be doing live shows. That doesn't mean people aren't doing them. Lots of people are doing them. I think it's too soon for it to be safe. But I think in the next couple months, we may. I'm not a doctor, and I'm not pandemicologist. Hey, I just made up a word. But I feel like if we get closer to 2/3 of the country vaccinated, I will feel better. About going out there and being in close proximity to people and sharing a microphone with other people and all that stuff like we used to do back in the good old days. So short answer, not in the next couple weeks, but probably mid-June or July, I'll be ready to do that.
So with that leads me to the next question then. Has there been any, I know a lot of places are shut down, a lot of places are starting to open back up little by little, but has there been any places since this pandemic has started that have asked you to come out and do a show that you've had to turn down because of what's going on?
I don't think so. Because if you've ever been a stand-up comic, people don't ask you to do shows. You call them up and beg them, can I do a show? And I've just stopped doing that. But I will start again. One of the places I work regularly, as I said, is the Bluebird Cafe, which is a songwriter's venue here in Nashville. I've been the MC on Sundays there since 2007. They've been closed. They're very much intent on staying afloat and reopening, and they will. If you ever watch the TV show Nashville, they're pretty iconic in that, and they still sell a lot of merch over their website, and they have Zoom music events that are doing okay. They're struggling, but they're hanging in there, unlike some clubs which have closed forever due to the pandemic. When the Bluebird is ready to open again, and they're a tiny, tiny venue. They got about 90 seats, and you are crammed next to everybody else. When they're ready to go, I'm ready to go. So.
Now, with that being said, I guess when you're on stage and you're doing a show, do you prefer a small crowd, a medium crowd, or a big arena?
I don't think it's that simple. I prefer a crowd that's focused and wants to have a good time. Comedy really requires focus, and that's, to me, that's a bigger deal these days than cancel culture. Everybody's so distracted by everything. If you've been to a comedy club in the past couple of years, most of them are requiring that you put your phone away. They have a special bag that they lock your phone in, or they collect them at the door and you can have it when you leave. People have a great deal of difficulty living without their phone for an hour and a half. And that is symptomatic of our inability to focus on anything for more than a couple of minutes, if that. If you can get people to focus on you and give you a chance and we can all have a good time, that's more important than how many people are there. I've had, even before the pandemic, I've done a couple shows that were so badly attended. I had three people and we had a ball. I've got video recordings of three people making more noise than a crowd of 100 because they were just having such a good time. And then, but, you know, a big crowd is more fun, too, because you can tell a little joke that you don't think that's funny. It's just a throwaway, and you get this big wave of laughs. That's always good, too. So I don't think there's a simple answer to your question. I like a crowd that's into it and that is there to have a good time. And it doesn't mind if the feathers get ruffled a little bit. They'll let it roll off. Let's just have fun.
See, you know, and with the one cool thing that you and I have in common, and you probably don't want me to mention this, but, you know, I put out a comedy CD that went aluminum, and, you know, and I know that your CD probably went platinum or gold or silver, but
mine went plastic,
you know,
and I got a Frisbee nailed to the wall. Thank you.
Well, thanks. There you go. Mine sold the same amount as an aluminum can, which is interesting.
Hey, at least you can recycle that thing.
Right, exactly.
Hey, somebody's taking a trombone lesson. Can we get back to this?
Yes.
So now I got to ask you as a comedian, I know this is a subject that you guys like to talk about or don't like to talk about, but I'm going to ask it because I can't help
you do
myself.
It. Go for it, man.
We have Steve Goody's our guest here. We have 4 minutes left of regular time. We have 10 minutes left of this interview. Real quick, before we sign off on the live portion, before we go into overtime, if our fans want to check you out and see you and see what you're doing, you got a Facebook, an Instagram, a YouTube, a Twitter, a Twitch, a GoFundMe, what do you got?
I'm on all of those things, but I think the easiest thing to remember is just my website, stevegoody.com. The name's StevGoody.com. And if you type that in any of the search engines in YouTube or Spotify or Amazon or any of that stuff will come up. It just remember my name and make that the website or Google it. You can't lose.
And the cool thing about your website is they can contact you on your website as well, correct?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And if they would they be able to contact you if they wanted to have you do bookings or do they have to go through like a manager for that?
You're funny, a manager. Just contact me. There's a contact button, and that will take you to an email thing. Just send me an email if it's about work
and,
or
we
joke
also have,
or anything.
And for all our friends, know that we do have a contest going and it's still going on. Hopefully, Steve, you might be willing to send us some autographs from giveaways because we have a contest going on. Anybody that goes to our Facebook page, Off the Ropes, and likes it from the end of the show to the beginning of next show automatically is qualified to win autographs from, I guess, from that week or the previous weeks. Would you be willing to send us a few for giveaways?
Heck yeah. I'll do even better. I'll sign a CD and send it. How about that?
Awesome. And then you also, because the icon has an ego and you've got a man cave, I got a spot right on my man cave wall for an autographed picture from you. Can you send one to the icon too?
Fantastic. Yes.
Okay. There we go. So we
I
have
keep thinking you're talking about someone
time.
Else.
Right. So we got so we got 2 minutes left of regular time, 5 minutes overtime. Here we go. So now back to what I was asking. Now, how? And I don't know if you want you have an opinion on this. I'm sure you do. So I'm going to ask it because I can't stop myself. Hecklers. How do you, as a comedian, handle hecklers? What is the worst experience you've had with one, and how do you deal with it?
Well, the first step in dealing with a heckler is pushing down the hatred. Somebody who comes to a comedy club and feels that they are helping by yelling stuff out, when I have gone to the trouble, and this applies to any comedian, we've gone to the trouble to craft an act made of jokes that are carefully worded and paced, and we're doing our best to hone that and get it right, and some guy thinks he's helping by jumping up in the middle and ruining that particular honing, the timing. You know, you've heard comedy's about timing. It's about timing. Even if you're struggling, as a comedian, we all have bad nights. The best thing to do if you're an audience member is just shut up and give us a chance to get on the rails, and we probably will. And if we don't, oh well, there's another comedian coming up right after us. But if somebody insists on heckling and it's not good-natured, I think the thing to do is give them enough rope to hang himself, and the audience will probably take care of it. As long as you're not looking like a dope and you can't handle it, it's not really necessary to slam them real hard. Just play ball long enough till the audience starts booing them, and then you win. You can just stand there and watch the whole audience gang up on this idiot.
So you wouldn't ever ask for, like, somebody to exit then?
So for someone to be ejected? Is that what you said?
Yeah, right.
Not just for talking. If they're being belligerent, and I've seen this. It's not happened while I've been on stage, but I've seen it happen to other comedians. If they are offended or just stupid and drunk, I've wanted them ejected, and if they get ejected, I'm happy about it, just because they can't shut up. They can't. And the thing I'm picturing right now is drunkenness more than belligerence. It's just some people just cannot handle being drunk, and they can't shut up when they're drunk. That's another thing I like about house concerts, by the way, as opposed to comedy clubs. You play a house concert, the house is not bound and determined to sell beer. When you play a comedy club, you are there to push liquor sales. That's how they make their money. And God bless them for it. But the night, it's nice to play someone's house because you almost never have a drunken heckler or a heckler at all. It's just nice. So if you have a house and you want to have comedy, let me know. Let's do a house concert. It's way better than a comedy club. Although, if you have a comedy club, I'd love to play it.
I just want to share this. We used to have a comedy club here in around my hometown in Moorhead, Minnesota, called Courtney's Comedy Club. I don't know if you ever played there. That's actually where I met Brad, and we became friends. I don't know if he'll admit it, but anyway. There was a comedian that was telling us about, he used to – I can't remember the name of the guy, but he used to be involved in Adult Swim.
Uh-huh.
And he was – there was a guy that was heckling him in the audience pretty bad. And the guy was shown the door. And then the guy showed a story about this heckler. He said, yeah, I was at this place in Nashville, and I went out to my car, and someone took a dump on my car. They actually climbed up on top of the roof and took a dump on the windshield. And he said he went in to talk to the bartender. He said, oh, Calvin did that. It's like, you guys know who did it? Yeah, he does that to every comedian he doesn't like.
Jesus.
Really?
That's not heckling. That's vandalism.
Yeah, and the comedian, he said, I just had to ask the bartender, how many times has he done this? Oh, he doesn't like any comedians. We just like to have him come in until we can throw him out because it's kind of interesting to see the comedian's reaction. Really?
I disapprove of the whole thing. Yeah, I'm against it. It's not fair to the other patrons who paid their money and want to see a comedian do their best.
Yeah.
Isn't that what you want? When you go to a comedy show, you want the comedian to succeed. If they're succeeding,
right,
you're laughing. So why would you support something that's interfering with that?
Yeah, I know one thing. I know how I'd react if someone took a dump on my porch. You know?
Yeah, I would not be fine with that either. Hey, you guys are based in Fargo, right?
Well, I'm in Fargo. Granny's in Arkansas, and Big Swing's in Albany, New York.
Oh, you guys are all over the place. Well, I wanted to tell my Fargo story real quick before I run out of time. In 1996, I was doing a string of one-nighters, and one of them was in Fargo. And the next day, I had the day off, and I went and saw the movie Fargo. This was in 1996 when the movie Fargo came out. I saw Fargo in Fargo. And I want you to know, I was the only one laughing because apparently everyone else thought it was
Fargo,
a documentary.
Well, yeah, here in Fargo, we don't like the movie. We don't talk like that. But you know what's interesting about that movie? You know, the wood chipper from the movie is actually here in Fargo at the visitor center.
Neat. But didn't that take place in Minnesota, that part?
Well, yeah, I know, but still, it is, you know, we own the rights to that wood chipper.
Okay. I would never take that away from you.
So we got Steve Goody's our guest here. We got about 2 minutes of overtime. But I'll tell you what, Steve, you have been tremendous. You've been awesome. And I'll understand if you would not accept an invitation to come back. But we definitely would like to have you come back on again. You've been so awesome. And you know, and hopefully you can send us some autographs and some giveaways. And
well, thanks. You guys have been a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
I would like a couple CDs, too. That way I can, when I'm traveling down the road this summer with the Fargo Invaders, I'll have something to keep me entertained, because they definitely don't like when I do stand-up comedian on the bus, and they don't like the movies I bring to watch. So, you know,
man,
maybe I'll put in the CD and entertain the team.
Yeah, and then they'll totally not like you. That's a great idea.
Well, there you go. I mean, I know you're probably not a wrestling fan, but I have what they call X-Pac heat. And I don't know where it comes from. I don't know why I would have heat with anybody, because I am a great good old boy. I'm a country boy from North Dakota, for God's sake. But I get heat with everybody.
That's great. I can't explain it, man. I think you're awesome.
Well, you know, we love you too, Steve, and we do appreciate you coming on tonight, and I thank you for all you do, and for the fans that have to download the show, we'll let you close it and tell the fans something that are downloading the show that had to listen to the overtime by downloading. Give them something.
Hey, all you people, listen to this show by downloading it, or the icon's going to come to my house and beat the crap out of me.
Or I'll call you at 2 in the morning so I get that restraining order put back into play.
Yeah, I got to give Shauna a call and apologize for all that.
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, she is still listening, so, yeah.
That's great.
Well, I'll tell you what, thank you, Steve, very much for being with us. And for those that are going to download the show, be checking out our Off the Ropes page on Facebook, because of course, Facebook won't let us change the name to Attitude Era Live because they say it's combative or offensive, which is much of BS. that's my opinion. But check us out. The guests that we're going to have on will drop Friday night, so you can check us out. And we thank Steve for joining us. Thank Sean Reed, and thank Mr. Kaplan for being with us. And I guess we'll see you next week. Big Swing, if you're ready, go ahead and hit the theme music.
All righty.